Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello and welcome to High Energy Health. I'm so glad you're here.
You are muted.
You'll be listening to all kinds of other things and filling your head and your consciousness with all kinds of ideas. And you've chosen something healthy. You've chosen something uplifting. You've chosen something inspiring. And that is such a profound statement of self-care. I know I'm not immune to the news. I listen to the news or watch or read it every once in a while. But I also make sure I inoculate myself with the antidote. So I'll go read Good News Network or NiceNews.com, one of those sites, and really try and get a sense of what's going on in the world that is both sides of the picture. So you being here and you making High Energy Health part of your daily routine is your commitment, part of your commitment to loving yourself, to balancing your contents of your consciousness, and defending your mind with ideas that really can make a difference in your life and uplift you. I am so glad you're here. I'm going to ask you to do two things. One is I'm going to ask you to listen to today's conversation or watch today's conversation, and I'm going to ask you to do that actively, active listening, and I'm going to ask you to reflect by writing in your journal, writing on a piece of paper, writing on a tablet, ideas that might make a difference in your life. Also, you'll know that often I'll interrupt our show for a moment or two and turn something one of our guests has said into an exercise that you do. And I'm actually planning several of those today, so I'm going to give you leave you with a list of homework after today's show. And so please do grab something to write with, and I can guarantee you you're going to have some provocative questions asked of highly direct relevance to your own life, maybe fundamental relevance to how you live your life and who you see yourself being. So please do listen actively, keep notes, and the second thing is please do email a link to this episode, to another episode, to anyone you know who needs help and encouragement. There's so many people there who are just stuck. You know, they're just in their own well of thoughts and ideas, and they may be suffering in very deep ways, and the world is full of suffering. What we can do to help is share our light. And when you hear an inspiring idea, when you're exposed to an inspiring speaker, go ahead and let others know. You never know when that piece of information you give them can really rock their world and really make a difference. So thank you for listening actively. Thank you for sharing the wealth of information, knowledge, and inspiration on the show with other people in your world. You are going to so enjoy today's show. It is with a journalist called Perry Garfinkel, and he is the author of a book called Becoming Gandhi. Also, I have made so many dog-eared pages. My grandmother told me never to dog-ear a book's page, and I've violated that sacred rule of reading many times over the course of reading Becoming Gandhi. Perry has been contributing to the New York Times for many different years, many different sections. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Buddha or Bust. He's also written for National Geographic, AARP, the LA Times, Huffington Post, and many other places. His website is perrygarfinkel.com, perrygarfinkel.com. And again, the title of the book is Becoming Buddha. Perry, what a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. And your introduction to, you know, the big context really was spot on for me personally and the driver of this book. One thing, in terms of dog ears, now I use Post-its.
So my grandma would be really teased, Terry. She's turning in her grave. So, yeah, and you know, the whole premise of the book is you decided to literally walk in the footsteps of Gandhi and then metaphorically retrace his values and retrace his steps. I'm so curious as to what led you to that idea, because I mean that's profound application of our values. What were the catalytic ideas, thoughts, motivations that led you to making that remarkable commitment?
Well, sometime in the last book I wrote, Buddha or Bust, I discovered that people turn to Buddhism when they've hit the bottom, when they've lost faith in faith itself. And Buddhism is the religion, it's not even a religion, it's a psychological practice, really, a philosophy that doesn't rely on, it relies on what you yourself experience and see. So as I was going through this understanding, I hit a low in my personal life. And rather than go back to Buddhism, I've been to India many times, and I always saw statues of Gandhi and streets named Gandhi, plazas named Gandhi. And I thought, well, maybe this guy has something for us today. And I decided to dive deeper. And so, as you said, on two levels, I followed in Gandhi's footsteps. I went to England, where he studied law. I went to India, where it had been many times, as I said. And I went to the villages he was born in and where he studied. And then I went to South Africa, where he spent 20-odd years developing his philosophy called Satyagraha, which is basically, we say, peaceful resistance, nonviolent resistance. And so not only did I follow in his footsteps literally, but as you said, metaphorically or figuratively, I took on six of the main principles that he applied to his own lifestyle. And I tried to keep away from the politics. Gandhi, the politician who helped India free itself from the shackles of British colonial rule. It was life-changing, really.
Now, you mentioned in one section of the book toward the end that he never held public office. He was never elected for anything. He never ran for anything. And yet is regarded as the father of the nation. And just the sheer power of conviction, of faith, of consistency made that huge difference. So let's talk about those six principles. You mentioned that, early in the book, you mentioned that there are 11 principles, but you picked these six key ones to really work with. Some you found fairly obvious and easy, others you really wrestled with. And I love the chapter you had on truth. So let's just begin with truth, that initial value.
Well, truth can be seen, you know, up here, like the higher truth that our purpose in life, or just down here to tell the truth. Many of us have even trouble telling the truth. But to live our higher truth is more challenging. And so I went through, you know, the different types of truth there are. There's absolute, relative, subjective, objective. Gandhi had this mind that he looked at life in 360 degrees. So he evaluated, you know, what are the dimensions? What are the angles that we can look at truth at? I, at first, took it superficially, so I stopped lying, you know, on dating websites or, you know, about my height to people, my age. And then I got deeper, and I realized I was lying to myself about myself. And I think many of us wake up every morning, and we put on this armament called our ego, and we, you know, assume the personality of who we think that we are, and then also who we think others think of us as. And it's a very mirror kind of experience. So when you strip that all down, who am I really? And so I went pretty deep with that. And, you know, it was like a deep dive, and you hit rock bottom like, oh, I'm nothing, I'm no one. And then you start from zero and you build yourself up again. So that became like a regular ritual for me. And then the truth stuff, it was easier to eliminate lies in my life and lying to other people. One more thing about truth. Gandhi was famous for saying, he started by saying, God is truth. Coming from his deep spiritual understanding, he was a Hindu. His mother was from a devout branch of Hinduism. As he came closer to understanding his truth, he flipped it and decided that truth is God. That if we can live in truth, we come naturally closer to, and you can fill in the noun. Some call it God, some call it the Force, some call it, you know, universal consciousness. That was the process I went through, David.
Profound process to ask yourself. I know the great non-dualist teacher Ramana Maharshi, who was a contemporary of Gandhi's, said that was the fundamental question to ask ourselves as human beings, is who am I? And he wrote a famous book called Who Am I? And he regarded that as the path to awakening. So I'm going to just put us on pause here for a moment and have you as a listener, I want you to take that moment, grab your journal, and just write down those three words. Who am I? Now, we know you are not going to come to an answer and a conclusion or a definitive result here in the course of listening to High Energy Health today, but as you play with that, as you contemplate that deeply, you're going to probably go through layers, many layers, of understanding and self-discovery. So just begin by writing down the question. We'll give you time. You'll actually have lifetime, or if the Hindus, if you believe, many lifetimes to answer it. And so just write down the question to begin with now. Before we go further, that central question of asking yourself, in truth, at base, who am I? So, yeah, getting down to the bedrock of being to ask yourself that question, and both personal truth and then moving to universal truth, that truth of God. Where did that take you?
Well, let me add to what you're saying that as I studied Buddhism and Hinduism, and I'm Jewish, so I come from a Jewish tradition, and today happens to be Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the new year in the Jewish calendar. So I wish all my Jewish friends and all my friends a Happy New Year. I find that the fundamental questions of all religions are, who am I, why am I here, and what, how is this all put together? How is the world put together? It's almost a primal kind of questions from birth. We're trying to identify, you talked about Ramana Maharshi, right? Non-dualism is about me, not me, you know. And so as we grow up, we differentiate, oh, I'm not my mother's breast. I'm not this house. And our consciousness expands. I am part of this universe. So, these are the three questions that I think set the tone, set the goal for an exploratory kind of life. Who am I? Why am I here? What's this all about, Alfie?
And we may never come to any definitive conclusion.
Let me add to that, and it's a good point you make. So the original title of my book was Being Gandhi, but I realized there's no way to be that man. He was a kind of machine and a very different kind of human being. So I decided to change the title to Becoming Gandhi, which is very important because I feel that we're always on this path of self-discovery. If you think you've arrived at a place where you think you know who you are, wait a minute, you know. There's another layer deeper, and that becomes your purpose, to discover your purpose.
Yeah, it's to ask the question rather than to get a definitive answer. Right. And I know that sometimes Ramana Maharshi's disciples try to pin him down as to what the end result was. What's the actual final definitive answer to the question? And, of course, it is simply a question that unfolds progressively as you develop as a human being. Yes. So the second of the great, and, of course, probably the best known, of the values that Gandhi espoused was nonviolence. That's the second one. And I know that you talk about how that challenged you on so many levels. Go ahead and share what you came to the conclusion Gandhi really meant by that, and also how that presented you with personal challenges in your life.
So what Gandhi meant by it was a movement of resistance to the rule of somebody who's holding themselves above you. And they're using a force to make you do the things they want you to do or not do the things they don't want you to do. So that was his tool, passive resistance, nonviolent resistance. He set the matrix for what later Martin Luther King followed to, you know, ignite the black movement in America. Nelson Mandela used the same technique, Vaclav Havel in Eastern Europe. So that was on the surface. When I explored it myself, I realized, again, it begins with yourself. So I looked at the ways in which I was unconsciously acting violently. I grew up with a father who was passive-aggressive. You know, he wouldn't yell at me, but days would go by and he would just brood, and I could see by his clenched jaw that he was really angry at me. And then as I grew up and went through the psychologies, I realized that expressing yourself is a much better way, and not with anger and hostility. So I explored how I myself create violence within myself. And we even use words like, I beat myself up for not doing this. That's like a violent act. So did I punch myself in the face? Not literally, but psychologically. And so I, you know, began to shed these kinds of acts of violence. And then I looked at how can I eliminate the influx of violence in my life. As you said at the top, we have to watch TV. I'm a newsman. As you said, I'm a journalist. So it's kind of impossible not to look at the news. And when you do, there's a lot of bad news and a lot of violence. In fact, I just wrote a piece. It's not yet published or even not yet accepted, but it was about the fact that in the world today there were 32 wars taking place right now, either tribal wars, country to country. So we're surrounded by it. So I watched the news less, but I also eliminated violent sports like football. Hockey I never watched because it seemed like hockey was only pushing the puck between the real action of guys beating the heck out of each other. So I explored these. Gandhi was very peaceful man, but he was staunch. He was, you know, committed, and in my estimation, seemed austere. But as I interviewed people, his grandson among them, his great grandson, he was known to be a warm person. He loved kids. He made them laugh. You don't really see that so much out there in the world. But he took this all to heart personally. Yes.
I want to just have us do another exercise right now, and I want to hone in on one thing that you're saying here, Perry, and that is violence toward yourself and your own thoughts. And I work in the field of psychological training and train a lot of therapists and coaches, and what we find when we dig into the violent acts and the issues people have is they're often accompanied by an enormous amount of negative self-talk. So I want you to write down now, just before we go to our first break, I want you to write down in your journal or on that piece of paper, but just ask yourself the question, what are my violent thoughts about myself? What are my violent thoughts about myself? How am I being violent to myself by my thoughts? And the reason I'm asking you to focus on yourself, not others, is every once in a while I come across people who are angry or expressing violently toward other people, and I just know from decades of research into trauma and stress that their inner self-talk is much more violent toward themselves than the violence they're dealing toward other people. And so when you dig into the self-talk of that person who is saying something mean or hurtful, it's just a projection of their inner state. So I want you to focus for a moment. We're going to go to a break in just a moment here. But as you're journaling right now, what are your violent thoughts toward yourself? Write that down. Focus on that. Think about that for a few moments and work with that later on. It's going to be probably a gold mine of self-discovery of looking at violence among other people and in the world. Start with yourself. See what you find. We're going to a break right now. You're listening to High Energy Health. The book is called Becoming Gandhi. And for more on the author, go to his website, perrygarfinkel.com. We'll be right back after a break.
Have you heard the buzz about emotional freedom techniques, also called EFT or tapping? Millions of people have experienced breakthroughs in their mental, emotional, and physical health with EFT. Over 100 scientific studies show that EFT relieves pain, anxiety, and depression. If you or a loved one is suffering, download the free EFT mini manual at tappinggift.com today. That's tappinggift.com. Get your free manual at tappinggift.com today.
VMware is a fresh perspective for virtualization on the cloud. Shaping the future, this all-in-one platform delivers virtual cloud service on any cloud. Visit our HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on VMware.
Helping other people heal is deeply satisfying. Watching a child's pain disappear before your eyes, a loved one calming down after a panic attack, or a veteran recovering from PTSD is a wonderful feeling. Imagine yourself with the skills and confidence to help people every single day and a rewarding career in energy healing. Taught by expert faculty, you'll become skilled in techniques validated in over 1,000 scientific studies. So get certified as an energy psychology professional today at www.newhealer.com. Your first course is free at www.newhealer.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Imagine your love life, your health, your money, your career, your spiritual path. If you had the ability to turn your dreams into reality, the people who have discovered how to do this are master manifestors. Now you can learn their secrets at mastermanifestor.com. They'll give you a 21-day crash course in intuition, synchronicity, and manifestation. In just 7 minutes each day, the experts at mastermanifestor.com will train your brain to be like theirs. mastermanifestor.com. Remember, freedom of choice. www.healthylife.net.
Hello and welcome back to High Energy Health. I'm your host, Dawson Church. I love
you. Are
with
muted.
You every week. Can you tell? It's just wonderful to have this job, wonderful to be in this position to share all these ideas, all this wealth of information and all these therapies, all these methods of stress reduction. We live in a world in which it's possible to thrive more than ever before. So I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're thriving here with me. And I strongly recommend Perry Garfinkel's book, Becoming Gandhi. And for more about his work, go to his website, Perry Garfinkel, and then the last three letters are K-E-L, Perry Garfinkel. And if you just Google into his website, perrygarfinkel.com, will pop right up. He's also doing a workshop soon at Kripalu Institute. You'll know Kripalu in the Berkshires. We offer meditation classes there. There's a lot of yoga classes there. Our trainers train people there in emotional freedom techniques, EFT tapping at Kripalu. So there's a wealth of inspiration and practice there. And Perry's doing a workshop there soon, so check that out, as well as his website, perrygarfinkel.com. So, Perry, to go to the next of those values that Gandhi mentioned, let's pick up with the following one, vegetarianism.
Vegetarianism, P.S. about the nonviolence, by the way, my Kripalu weekend is called Finding Inner Peace in a Violent World. So I'm going to integrate my experience playing drums, writing, which I love that you're asking your audience to participate in, movement a la Thich Nhat Hanh's, walking meditation, a little bit of yoga, and just a lot of humor. I think humor is a great path to peace. Vegetarianism, right?
That's good.
I grew up in a family of meat eaters. It was, you know, it was like a sign of male pride. If we didn't have some kind of meat on the table, my mother would be apologetic, and it was a whole number there. So to give up meat altogether was a real challenge, and I did. For the first year, I did this journey for almost 3 years. The first year I gave up meat, chicken, and fish, and I had a strict vegetarian diet. It made me feel lighter. You know, my intestines really appreciated it. But then I had lived on an island for 10 years, Martha's Vineyard, and I love fish. So I now, honestly, in all truthfulness, I'm a pescatarian. So, and I find it beneficial to my health and happiness, and I get the protein I need. I have friends who are vegan, and they swear by the fact that you do not need that kind of protein to, you know, be strong and healthy. A friend of mine is the founder of Global Wellness Day, Belgian Axoy. I will recommend her for your show later. And she sent me articles about weightlifters who are vegetarians. And I condone it. I believe that it can make the world a better place because we all know, or I know now, the facts about how much waste, how much of Earth is wasted raising grains and wheat and whatever is needed to feed cattle to feed us. So, you know, I did struggle at first, but I saw the value. And throughout this process, I came up with a word that my rheumatologist had suggested when I was on prednisone for a while. He used the word taper. So, you know, you start at 20 milligrams a day or something. Anyway, I tapered down. So that was the approach I took with everything, including vegetarianism and simplicity and truth and nonviolence. I felt that in the process of becoming Gandhi, that you can shed some of the habits and behaviors that lead you down the path to unhappiness, anger, stress, and all the rest of the bad news that some people suffer through.
And also, you can try things on and see if they fit. And like the Dalai Lama has apologized for the fact that he has to eat some form of animal protein. He has eggs because his doctors have recommended that he do that. So you can try things for a while. You can try the occasional meat-free day, meat-free week, and see if that works for you. So play with these things. Have fun with them rather than regarding them as hard and fast rules you have to follow or else. So the simplicity is one of those, and that chapter I found thought-provoking because you found so much complexity, you uncovered complexity where you hadn't thought you would in your life and in our world. I'd love you to share fairly deeply on that.
Well, as a self-identifying, I've said and I feel that I'm a simple person living a complex life. So at heart, I feel like the village idiot, and I'm just to be the pig in ecstasy, just happy to be simple and letting that. As a journalist, that's counterintuitive. It doesn't work that way. And also as a sentient being in the world, we see human interactions are complicated. How to make a living becomes complicated. These are factors of life that, you know, I think we need to learn how to deal with. We cannot completely live a simple life, but again, we can taper down. Gandhi famously died with about 8 personal objects. Things like his toothbrush, you know. And I say in my book that some people measure their lives by how much they've gained, how much they've accrued. And Gandhi, on the flip side, is recognized for how little he had. And as you said at the top, he never held a title. He was a lawyer, but he never was the CEO of a company. He never ran for office. And so he tried to be a simple monk in the midst of leading a revolution about against England. But in the modern times, where it's daunting, Lawson, to try to live a simple life, we have this thing that is now like attached to our wrist, which puts us in touch with the universe. And it's too easy, and I'm so upset. When I live down the hill from the University of California at Berkeley. So up and down the avenue right off of where I live, I see students looking down at their phones, crossing the street, and I'm thinking, as my dad used to say, there but for the grace of God, you know, that's the way they make angels, he used to say. And it's too easy, and it's a little saddening to see that happening. So one of the recommendations is, you know, leave your phone at home or, you know, go offline for an hour or two a day. If you meditate, don't sit there with the phone. I used to do this. I used to meditate with the phone next to me. That's no-no. That's a no-no. So there are ways to live a simpler life without, you know, donning saffron robes and, and living off the grid, as they say.
Yeah, so think now for a moment as we go to the next break about simplicity in your life and how might you simplify it. And Perry has just recommended a really simple practice, which is, for a while, it can be regarded as a personal health, a personal hygiene, as a spiritual practice. Just turn off or set aside that phone. It might be for 2 hours in the morning. It might be for half the day. And what you'll find you're doing then is you're claiming that time and becoming the master of your life for that time period. So just write down in your journal simplicity, and especially the complexity that comes from being hyperlinked to the outside world. How can I create a world? How can I create an oasis of space that is mine? You're listening to High Energy Health. We'll be right back after a break.
Dawson Church's award-winning book, Mind to Matter, has been hailed as one of the best science and health books of the decade. Over 400 studies show that your brain has the ability to turn thoughts to things, and that when you use the superpower deliberately, you can create an extraordinary life. Mind to Matter is the science and practice of how our brains create reality, and Dawson is so committed to helping people transform that he's giving copies of the book away free at mindtomatter.com. Claim your free copy at mindtomatter.com now.
If you're looking for unique items at affordable prices, then you should try Dream Product. From apparel to beauty, from shoes to therapeutic relief products, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Dream Products, and maybe your dreams might just come into reality.
Imagine having a certified wellness professional at your service 24/7. Whenever you're stressed, anxious, angry, sleepless, or depressed, you get help the moment you need it. You can talk to a compassionate practitioner anytime you want at MyStressSolution.com. In the Stress Solution app, trained experts are standing by when you need them most. Experience a free introductory session at MyStressSolution.com. You never have to face your problems alone. Get instant help at MyStressSolution.com.
You have too little time to shop, so try Farm Fresh to You. They deliver organic food the way nature intended, delivered straight to your home or office, economically. Visit our web advertiser page and click on Farm Fresh to You now.
Dawson Church's award-winning book, Mind to Matter, has been hailed as one of the best science and health books of the decade. Over 400 studies show that your brain has the ability to turn thoughts to things, and that when you use the superpower deliberately, you can create an extraordinary life. Mind to Matter is the science and practice of how our brains create reality, and Dawson is so committed to helping people transform that he's giving copies of the book away free at mindtomatter.com. Claim your free copy at mindtomatter.com now.
If you're looking for unique items at affordable prices, then you should try Dream Product. From apparel to beauty, from shoes to therapeutic relief products, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Dream Products, and maybe your dreams might just come into reality.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Hello, and welcome back to High Energy Health. Isn't
you are
great
muted.
Experience to be listening actively? Isn't it great to be listening and then writing down these ideas and how we can apply them in our lives? That means we get a chance to actually act on this wisdom, embody these Gandhian values, and challenge our old thinking, shake up the ways we've seen the world, and ask ourselves these profound questions. Again, the book is called Becoming Gandhi, and you can see more at Perry's website, Perry Garfinkel, that's GARFINKEL, perrygarfinkel.com, including his upcoming workshop at Kripalu. So, Perry, how else were you challenged in applying this Gandhian value of simplicity to your life?
Thank you, yes. Two things that I did and that anybody can do. We live in a consumer society. We're consumptive. So the two things I did very consciously, and I was really looking forward to this when I took on this project, I went through my closet, literally. I cleaned out my closet. And I looked at clothes that I had not worn for 5 years. And I do live around the corner from a secondhand store that used to send the proceeds to an HIV counseling group. So I got rid of a lot of things that I did not use anymore, consciously thinking, I'm over-consuming. I'm taking up, I'm buying things and using things, but I'm not really using them. I can simplify my life, and you can simplify your life by eliminating things in your closet. You're uncluttering your life, literally and figuratively. The other thing I did is I called a moratorium, by the same token, on a moratorium on buying things other than food, or, you know, if I was desperate for a winter jacket. I actually got a winter jacket on the street at a flea market. So wherever I could find ways to recycle or be recycling, I took that path rather than buying something new. We don't need half of, I found out if we don't need, literally, in my case, a third of the things in my closet are now, you know, with somebody who needs them more. So that felt good on several levels. So those are my simplicity suggestions.
So, again, that's something you can easily practice in your own life, and that five-year time frame may be a perfect one. You may want to make it a year. You may want to make it 10 years. But ask yourself that question, what can I let go of? What do I really need? And the answer turns out to be very little. I also want to just observe that as you awaken, as you are entering in meditation, that space of connection with universal consciousness, with the universe itself, you find that that's what you want, to pretty much the exclusion of everything else. So you find that all the stuff you used to want is just like so meaningless by comparison to that, the one thing that really counts, which is the quality of our connection with the all that is.
Yes.
So as you meditate, you'll find your desire for those things dropping away. And my guess is those two things have gone hand in hand for you as well, Barry.
It turns out the old Zen saying, less is more, is true. And I live in what I consider now a humble abode. It's a two-bedroom apartment in Berkeley. When I think, oh, I need more space, I'm a Leo, so I want to roam, I want to prowl. But I've learned to kind of downsize in a very healthy way.
So let's move now to the final two of those Gandhian virtues and values you were practicing, which are faith and celibacy. And the chapter in the book on celibacy is fairly brief. I already spent a long time on that. And so celibacy, but did give you some challenges and have you ask yourself some questions, and then faith, which of course is central to how Gandhi saw the world.
Well, let me address celibacy. As my editor asked me, you know, will celibacy lead to a more moral life? Well, no, I don't think so. I know in my Jewish tradition, rabbis marry, and that is, you know, part of the life cycle. But I looked at this way, Dawson. We are bombarded with sexual images that don't get us don't go anywhere. They may stimulate our lower chakra, but to no end. So I just began to recognize, you know, in the Vipassana tradition, noting is part of the practice. To be aware that I'm being bombarded by sexual images is the beginning of, you know, disconnecting from them. So I began to be more conscious of how seeing commercials that show women in bikinis that have nothing to do, the product has nothing to do with women in bikinis. There are a number of examples of that. So I stopped that. In terms of being celibate, I didn't have a girlfriend. I don't now. So it wasn't a matter of abstaining from sex. It was more looking at how sexuality influences us in society and then choosing when we want to turn away from that. So that's all I would say about that.
Yeah, and again, as with anything, simply becoming mindful of the culture we live in, all those messages, all those ads, and then becoming aware of your response to them, that by itself might be enough. So now going to the the big one, faith. How did Gandhi see faith? How did your three-year odyssey in following in Gandhi's footsteps, and again, I just want to stress that Perry did that, like he tried to do Gandhi's famous salt march. Maybe we'll get a chance to cover that later. But how did that focus on embodying those Gandhian values, especially the one of faith, shift your thinking, shift your life?
Well, Gandhi, as I said before, came from his mother was a devout Vaishnava, which was in the tradition of Hinduism. And when he went to England to study law, he secularized, I would say. He was exposed to the influences of the West, and he tried to walk the talk of the British. He changed his garb. He did ballroom dancing. All of these influences, I think, took him away from the core of his faith. But it was his rudder. His faith was his rudder, and you know, the saying before that he thought that God is truth, but then he changed it to truth is God. But he had what we call God consciousness. And by that, I interpret that to mean, but what he wrote about was that we live a moral life. It doesn't matter which church, which synagogue, which mosque you go to. It matters what your relationship with the golden rule is. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. I think that was, you know, the core of his faith that led him to, you know, go and using empathy. You could actually substitute like Hinduism or faith with empathy. For myself, having grown up in a Jewish family, and then when I started going to India in the 1970s, I was drawn to Hinduism, and then I became a student of Ram Dass, who I hope your listeners are aware of. He pushed a lot of us to study Hinduism, Buddhism. The guy who, you know, brought me to Hinduism more said, you're using your mind too much. You're thinking too much. Buddhism is trying to empty your mind and then let it be refilled with things that are of more value. So in my research, in fact, I started thinking about the fact that we are surrounded by faith. And so I did a little survey in the radius of where I live, in the 1 or 2 miles of where I live. I counted how many faith places of faith are there. There's a Catholic church across the street from me, and there's a Jewish Orthodox synagogue a couple of blocks further. And I went and interviewed four or five or six leaders of these various places of faith, and I began with the question, what is faith? And I got all kinds of different answers. And the what's problematic to me and why I finally myself land on Buddhism is most of these faiths depend on having faith in something that you don't personally experience. You have to, in other words, there was a kind of the tautology of having faith in faith. Well, there's no anchor there for me. And I think what I came to is that I've often also described myself as a spiritual expeditionary, that it doesn't matter which faith you follow, but to have a faith, to have a belief in some greater force. And then, finally, Dawson, have faith in myself. This sort of ties into, I think, the nonviolence piece. A lot of us beat ourselves up, and we have a lot of negative thoughts about ourselves. My nose is too long. I'm not as smart as, you know, my friend. I'm not as successful. These things are all bring us down. And what I'm looking for is higher consciousness. So my faith was a study in faith in my own ability to be discerning about what is good for me in my life and turn toward the good and away from the bad. I have bad habits, I'll be quite honest. And every day, part of my faith study is to turn from those things that I know lead me down a path that doesn't really bring me up. They bring me down. And so these are my simple faiths. I wasn't ordained as a Buddhist monk. I was bar mitzvahed, but I didn't, you know, carry on. I've been in a Catholic church maybe three or four times. I visited places of faith around the world, which are now more like historical, cultural museums than places where people sit and pray. On the praying part, meditation is like a prayer to me. Walking in the woods, emptying my mind of concerns is prayer for me. And even like on Jewish holidays like Yom Kippur, which is a day of fasting and a day of atonement, I take a walk on a beach and solitary. So these are some of my practices. And, you know, I can't speak for Gandhi, let's be clear. We can only understand what he's written. And he's written extensively about faith. One of the things he talks about, which is like pan-religion, is this issue that you touched on of dualism.
Terry, hold that thought. We need to go to a break right now, but let's come back to dualism and non-dualism in the final segment, and also that idea of personal experience, which is absolutely crucial. You're looking at Hydrogen Health. For more on Perry's work, visit his website, perrygarfinkel.com. His book, Becoming Gandhi, is going to rock your world and make you really think about those eight values and where you stand with all of them. We'll be right back after a break.
Imagine having a certified wellness professional at your service 24/7. Whenever you're stressed, anxious, angry, sleepless, or depressed, you get help the moment you need it. You can talk to a compassionate practitioner anytime you want at MyStressSolution.com. In the Stress Solution app, trained experts are standing by when you need them most. Experience a free introductory session at MyStressSolution.com. You never have to face your problems alone. Get instant help at MyStressSolution.com.
VMware is a fresh perspective for virtualization on the cloud. Shaping the future, this all-in-one platform delivers virtual cloud service on any cloud. Visit our HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on VMware.
Dawson Church's award-winning book, Mind to Matter, has been hailed as one of the best science and health books of the decade. Over 400 studies show that your brain has the ability to turn thoughts to things, and that when you use this superpower deliberately, you can create an extraordinary life. Mind to Matter is the science and practice of how our brains create reality, and Dawson is so committed to helping people transform that he's giving copies of the book away free at mindtomatter.com. Claim your free copy at mindtomatter.com now.
No matter what is happening on the outside, to make a difference, work on the inside. You are part of the fabric of life. Have a positive impact on yourself and others. Take a break from the dark side. Listen to the positive side of podcasts. HRNradio.com.
Helping other people heal is deeply satisfying. Watching a child's pain disappear before your eyes, a loved one calming down after a panic attack, or a veteran recovering from PTSD is a wonderful feeling. Imagine yourself with the skills and confidence to help people every single day and a rewarding career in energy healing. Taught by expert faculty, you'll become skilled in techniques validated in over 1,000 scientific studies. So get certified as an energy psychology professional today at www.newhealer.com. Your first course is free at www.newhealer.com.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
What were we talking about?
Hello and welcome
you
back
are muted.
To High Energy Health. My name is Dawson Church, and I'm so delighted you're here. Please do listen actively for the last few minutes now. Also, please remember to share this show or another show with a friend. We have so many shows, hundreds of them in our archives, and if you see one that could really help someone you know who's suffering, send them a link. Let them know about High Energy Health and about all the wonderful new approaches, new therapies we have available to us to help us shift and let go and release that suffering. So please do share the show with others. For more on Perry's book, go to his website, perrygarfinkel.com. The book itself is called Becoming Gandhi. So, Perry, for our last few minutes together, I'm thinking again about this whole question of faith and experience. You mentioned that most of those faiths required you to believe something you weren't experiencing. Why was that a problem for you?
I'm really glad you brought this up. So, as I said, I grew up in the Jewish faith. My grandfather was a founding a member of a synagogue in Queens, New York, and I would be like the honored grandson with Grandpa. And I don't know if you know much about Judaism, but there's a tradition called davening, where as you pray, you rock back and forth, and you rock side to side. And the elders at the front, in the several front benches, would be rocking like crazy, and I couldn't access it. I didn't have the experience of whatever kind of enlightenment, out-of-body experience they were having.
Ecstasy.
Yeah. I was extremely jealous and frustrated. How do I get there? Do I have to master Hebrew and read the Old Testament inside and out? So I kind of left it with a frustration. When I was drawn to meditation, and I started attending Vipassana retreats, which is the simple breath exercise that the Buddha himself meditated with, to empty my mind and get deeper into my body sensations was like lightning in a rod experience for me. I have like bad knees, so sitting in a lotus position was extremely painful. But I learned this technique that you can actually go into the pain to go through and outside the other end of pain. so that you don't have this sensation of pain. But all of this led me to have this experience of this breakthrough experience that I am not my body. I am my mind. My mind can actually overcome issues of my body. And sort of ergo, the mind can help me move from, you know, obsessions of the mind to another place. You can, you know, I always think of the mind as like these, there's a fork in the road of the cortisol, the, whatever the circuitry in the mind are. And you can follow one electric charge to the place of unhappiness. We can follow the other to the place of happiness. And I just learned this from simple meditation. And also in Hinduism, there's a breath exercise called Vastrika, which is an inhalation here, an exhalation here, an inhalation here, an exhalation here. And this brings us to some sort of a ecstasy. It's a breath exercise, and it's, you know, yogis have used this for thousands of years. When we learned it in the, you know, in my time, in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, I realized that the body can be an instrument to take you to another place, a higher place. Yeah, drugs, you know, I've taken mescaline and experimented with those kinds of hallucinatory drugs, but nothing compares to the, you know, self-created transitory experiences.
And the breath is right there. It's part of what we are doing every moment of every day. Perry, what a joy to connect with you. I look forward to our next connection. And again, Perry's website, for those of you who'd like to follow his work, is Perry Garfinkel. His highly recommended book is called Becoming Gandhi. Thanks for being here as part of our High Energy Health Community. Look forward to the next time. Every blessing till then.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you.